because I have got a thing that's unique and new. To prove it, I'll have the last laugh on you, cause instead of one head, I got two. And you know two heads are better than one.
Okay, good morning, and good morning to our guest, Dr. Russ Bowman.
Good morning.
And we are about to launch into our script. Before we do, I'd just like to announce that any resemblance to reality is pure coincidence, and this is a fictitious drama, and here we go.
Hi, Robin. Good to see you this morning. How are you doing?
I've been thinking about your suggestions about checking myself into that eating disorder treatment center in New Mexico.
Gee, I hope she can do this. The kind of care she needs, we just don't have here. So what are your thoughts about this?
I'm really afraid of, like, being there alone. You know, that's one thing. And look, let's face it, I know they're going to want me to gain weight, which, you know, to tell you the truth, I don't want to gain any weight. Why did I say this? He's going to know now. I admitted that I like being this weight, and I know he's going to think I'm crazy. Everybody thinks I'm crazy. Oh, God, I shouldn't have even come to this appointment today.
Hey, Robin, I know you don't want to be forced to gain weight, and nobody wants to be forced to do anything, but I notice you're of two minds. I think you know that by starving yourself, you're really hurting your body, and I think that you have compassion for that part of yourself.
That's kind of you to say. I wasn't thinking of two minds. I guess that's the truth. But, you know, I feel like I really need to be thin to be okay, you know? I mean, look at the magazines out there, and, you know, thin is, you know, let's face it, thin is what people really, women really, really like to be. And, you know, I'm proud of how thin I've gotten. People look at me and I know that they're thinking, she's got it. She has got it. But, you know, I don't know. I guess it's true that when I go on walks, I'm really kind of feeling weak, and, you know, I'm kind of getting spaced out. It's really scary, but I don't want to gain any weight, you know?
I hear what you're saying. And I really appreciate you having the trust to be open with me. What if you agree to go to protect your body? You've been doing so much worrying in your mind. Your body needs your help now, and I'm worried that, you know, you can't get enough help with that here.
Oh, I'm sorry. I didn't really want you to worry. I do that to everyone. I know you probably think I'm selfish, just like my family. They don't really get it. You know, my sisters must be jealous of me because I'm so thin. But, you know, I'm sorry. I don't want you to worry.
You're not being selfish, and you're not a burden to me. That's what I get paid to do. You know, I see that you're struggling, and you're under a lot of pressure. It seems to have started, you know, when your father developed cancer, and I know that you and he were very close, and that he began to count on you to run his business.
That's right. I know how to run his business. I am really good with all those details, and, you know, I'm the one that he always knew he could trust. And, you know, I've been going there for like 14 hours a day, 7 days a week, you know, since he's been sick. I cannot refuse him.
Boy, I hope what I have to say now doesn't really scare off. Look, I know your dad has needed you, but I think something else is going on here. I'm not a therapist, so I won't be able to help you much on this level, but I think there's something you need to work on that has to do with the eating disorder and your relationship with your father. What I'd really like you to do is get with our case manager and just do a phone interview with the New Mexico Center. They have a lot more knowledge and expertise than I do, and they can help you make a decision. Gee, I hope she doesn't bolt with that.
Well, you know, I don't know. I'm sort of yes, but also no. I can tell you in my head, I think I have never looked better, honestly.
Well, you know, in your body, I can tell you that your blood pressure is dangerously low. You know, you're having trouble concentrating. You're having, you know, you can't really do your walks you like to do. I mean, what does that tell you?
Oh, yeah, I'm confused. But, you know, you're implying that this is kind of dangerous. Is it really so?
Yeah, you know, I'm not going to over-dramatize stuff for you. It is a real concern.
Well, you know, You seem to be a good guy. I mean, I see your kids. They're so cool and successful, and you must be very proud of them. And, you know, your wife, and she's very active in the community. And maybe you're a really good person. Maybe you really are trying to help me. I don't know, you know. Do I have to make a commitment if I talk to this person?
Not at all. This is a phone interview. This is something that, you know, you are not making any commitment to anybody other than talking with the therapist on the other end of the phone and letting them try and get an idea of what's going on and see if they can help you.
Well, I, you know, honestly, I really don't want to, but I guess I can try to do it, but I can't promise. I can't promise anything.
Well, I understand. That's a good first step, though, and it's a big step.
Thanks. You know, to tell you the truth, there's like this really little thought that I have like way back in my head. And, you know, it's really scary to say. But, you know, I guess I kind of know I am hurting myself and I just can't stop.
Well, that's a really brave thing to tell me. And I think this is a good moment for
shrink wrap. Okay.
All right, then.
Thank you. So Dr. Bowman, I was wondering, what is it like for you as a doctor dealing with a challenge where somebody needs to get out of Haines to get treatment and they're ambivalent? In this case, we're dealing with a couple of levels, psychological issues as well.
It can be a real challenge. I was illustrated with this little vignette here that somebody who's not an extremist or on death's door, mm-hmm. but has a condition that is potentially life-threatening, and if it continues to go on, it could really cause problems. It's a lot of persuasion, mm-hmm. Multiple appointments. Getting with the patient to say, "Hey, these are what resources we have in town. We don't have what you need, but we know where to get it for you."
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You are going to have to make that decision, but my job is to provide you that information and give you my best medical advice.
Right. And what is it like for you personally, Russ, when you're in that position and you're facing someone who's really resistant or somebody who's just sick and leaving Haines is going to involve, you know, maybe financial hardship if they don't have the insurance. But what's it like for you as a person trying to do this doctorly duty?
Yeah, there's kind of a... I have two heads sometimes too, and one of them is I can be very blunt with somebody and say, if you don't do this, you're probably going to die.
Mm, wow, that's brave.
And we have those from time to time, and that usually gets people's attention. Mm, you explain to them that this is what you need, and this is where you can get it.
Mm-hmm.
If you don't do this, then these are the possibilities that are going to happen, and you try and make them understand why you're telling them that and why I'm being so upfront with them in the very beginning and say, look, I needed you to get your attention.
Mm-hmm.
And that usually does it. With something like this, though, where somebody has an eating disorder that potentially could kill them.
Yes, and it could, couldn't
yes,
it?
Yes, it could. It sure could. Mm-hmm. Trying to get them to see that what they're doing is affecting them, and that's where, you know, the walks weren't doing as well. She wasn't able to think.
Mm-hmm.
Trying to get the patient to realize that, gee, yeah, there really is something wrong.
Mm-hmm.
And but also understanding with them, like you said, that leaving town is a huge step.
Mm.
You know, they don't have their family with them if they're close to their family. They don't have or friends in town.
Mm-hmm.
The social support structure goes away oftentimes, mm-hmm. unless mm-hmm. they have relatives wherever they're going. And sometimes that happens too. We send folks far flung from here to,
yes.
you know, Minnesota or Arizona or something because they have family there.
Mm.
So sometimes that's a possibility as well.
Yeah. Well, it sounds like a huge job, and it sounds like, you know, you are really skilled at staying in your head and really having to inform them. You try to stay on that track. But personally, does it get a little hard sometimes?
It does from the point of view that and I guess that's because I do it for a living, is mm-hmm. that, you know, I can see that decision, and if mm-hmm. it were me, that would not be a hard decision to make.
Mm-hmm.
But again, I have to try and put myself in the patient's shoes,
yeah.
and look at them from, you know, a financial standpoint. I mean, some of these folks are like, gee, I'm going to be paying on this the rest of my life. And you try and talk with them about that and let them know that, that hospitals all have charity policies and they think if they, you know, they need to be upfront about that when they get there and that sort of stuff. So, so you try and give them those tools so that that's not so much of a burden. Oftentimes a family member can go with a patient if it's an emergency. We medevac them out of town. They can take somebody with them usually. To help, you know, be an advocate for them and provide support.
Right. So, you know, as a doctor, it seems like one of your skills, even though, as you said, you're not a therapist, one of your skills is having a good bedside manner. And apart from being the scientist delivering the information, that you could appreciate, you could empathize with what the patient's struggles are. And I think actually in this vignette, the patient who I played was feeling that. And also, being in a small community, the patient has a sense of you a bit, you know, and fantasies that, that you're okay because your family is out there. So you're seen a lot in the community. As a professional or anyone who does anything major here, you know, people start to, you know, recognize the links to those people.
And it's one of those things where, you know, if you listen more than you speak, oftentimes that's helpful.
Right.
You know, just kind of sit there and let the patient vent a little bit, you know, and say, well, I, you know, I understand what you're saying. And these are,
and in that way, you also learn the approach to take with that individual. And it's a very individual thing. One person you could be very blunt with, but another person you're going to have to approach it very softly. Correct.
So you're really thinking about the other person, you know, you're empathizing, you're mentalizing, you know, what's what are they going through, what are their circumstances, what's reaching them. So, you know, that's part of your approach.
When I was in training, and I think about this every day, one of my professors said, if you listen long enough, the person will tell you exactly what's wrong with them. So oftentimes it takes some listening. Sometimes it's a little frustrating to try and tease out some of that stuff, but you know, if you just kind of stick with it and listen to folks, you'll oftentimes figure out what, you know, what the underlying problem is. It may not be that their leg is broken. They may have other things, you know, going on that they're really more worried about.
And in this, this particular affliction, as you might call it, you know, there are so many underlying things like depression, like poor self-esteem. There's a lot coming at you, kind of avalanching steadily.
It's huge. You know, eating disorders, and, you know, you mentioned the, when people are bombarded with it every day with the magazines, and what, quote-unquote, what you should look like. And, you know, people that have this disorder look in a mirror and they see somebody totally different than you and I see. It's so much based on self-perception of what they're doing. You know, you said that, gee, I look good, and you looking to me, you look like a concentration camp survivor.
Right. And you know, along with that, I just want to mention another point here. So there's that pushing the anorexic eating disorder symptoms, but also this person, as you pointed out, as a doctor, you knew that she, because of the small community and you knew your patient, her father had recently gotten cancer, and she was taking on all this responsibility. And often in anorexia or eating disorders, we see someone struggling with a need to be in control. When other things aren't in control, and the other things they can't control in their lives, they look to this eating, unfortunately, because it's so attractive in the media, the thinness.
And controllable.
Yes.
On an individual level, they can absolutely determine their caloric intake.
Yes.
If nothing else in their life is under their control, at least that is.
Very good point.
Yes. And so the treatment approach is so savvy. The people who treat eating disorder patients in these centers, you know, really have to re-educate them and really empathize and help them move away from obsessing about food to, you know, seeing how that obsession is killing them, which is really hard. Okay. Well, anything else?
No, that was excellent, though. Very well done.
Thank you.
Very informative.
Okay.
Dr. Russ Bowman joins our shrink wrap, Dr. Robin Grace, for shrink wrap once again. Any final thoughts? Shrink wrap ideas come to you via?
They come to me via the waves in the canal.
Yeah.
People like Ihan sitting here who comes up with ideas. People ask me things on the streets. And I think about people in the community. Ah, your role, you're a doctor. What's it like for you? So I really would love to have people in the community come forward and talk about what's it like being here in relational schematas. That's what shrink wrap is partly about.
All righty then. Relational schemata, our specialty here on Shrink Wrap. And just listen to this.
Because I have got a thing that's unique and new. To prove it, I'll have the last laugh on you. Because instead of one head, I got two. And you know two heads are better than one.